I hope everyone had a liberating Pesach and Beatrice. And we're continuing our Shior and the Aseres Adibros. And we really were in the middle of Shabbos. I still have a few more comments, maybe a lot more comments, on the Inyan of Shabbos. You know, we're not supposed to pick favorites. And Perkei Avos actually says we're not allowed, as it were, to treat some mitzvos as more important than other mitzvahs. Nevertheless, just as a parent is not supposed to have a favorite, but perhaps, you know, there is a favorite, even though we don't say it, so too, it seems that Hashem does have a favorite, and Shabbos is certainly one of the favorites. We say in L'cha Dodi, which is the beautiful song written by Rav Shlomo Alkabitz, in the 16th century, he was the Talmud of the Arizal, and this was the whole circle of the mystics in Tzfat, that Likras Shabbos Lechu V'Neelcha, let us go and greet the Shabbos, ki hi makor habracha. Shabbos is the source of blessing for the entire universe, the entire 6 days. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh actually explains very graphically that even though on Shabbos Hashem does not do any new creation, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into the universe the spiritual energy that will sustain the following 6 days of creation. Meaning to say, the world is created in increments of 6 days at a time, and if Chas V'Shalom, there would be no Jew in the world who would be keeping Shabbos, the world would simply cease to exist after 6 days. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in. Now that also means the intensity of that energy and the quality of that energy depends on the degree and the magnitude of the Shabbos that we do keep. The stronger the Shabbos, both quantitatively and maybe more importantly qualitatively, it's not just a question of more people, the better the world, the higher the world, the holier the world, the more Kedusha there is in the world, because the entire week that follows gets its spiritual energy from the Shabbos that preceded it. This is what the Or HaChaim says. Now, you have to be mine a little bit because it's a little complicated, because on one hand, we have another teaching that Hashem recreates the world every single second, right? That's a very well-known idea. That this cup or ourselves, we don't exist now because we existed a second ago. We exist because it is the Ratzon Hashem to create us at this very moment. So there seems to be a little bit of a contradiction, which I'm not going to totally resolve, between the Or HaChaim's description that on Shabbos Hashem puts in the energy that will keep the world in existence for 6 days, versus the idea that every millisecond is a new act of creation. But still, it's not a total contradiction, because one may distinguish between potential and actualization. Meaning to say, the spiritual energy out of which Hashem fashions the world is the koach that comes into the world from Shabbos, but then Hashem actualizes it in every second of creation. Yeah. Because of continuous creation, yes, that's right.
So that ties in that there is no teva, that every second, every minute is a new creation.
That's right, that's right.
Anything new can be done.
That's correct. Even something like gravity is only a prediction. I mean to say, nothing is etched in stone. Every second, everything, not even a second, every indivisible unit of time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing creation anew, and therefore anything could happen. The fact that the past trillion times when you threw up a ball it went down, does not mean it's going to happen the trillionth and one time. And by the way, the notion of continuous creation is very, very consistent with modern physics. I am hardly an expert, and perhaps many of you may know more than I, or have relatives who know more than I. But if you look into modern physics today, you sometimes think you're studying Kabbalah. Modern physics sounds much more like mysticism than regular science, in terms of string theory and 26 dimensions of matter, and all sorts of things like that. But one of the foundations of modern physics, actually it's not so modern, it goes back to the 1920s and 30s already, but is what is called the uncertainty principle. And the uncertainty principle says there is no such thing as scientific determinism. Everything is a matter of probability. Since it happened in the past, we assume it's going to happen again, but there's nothing that is mechayev that it happens. On the other hand, you know, we go in airplanes based on those probabilities, so we're willing. So we are willing to take our chances, but nevertheless, theoretically, there is no such thing as a law of nature. There is only a probability, which is consistent with the notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is recreating every second, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not bound by anything that happened in the past. Okay, that was one thought about Shabbos. Now, a second thought I wanted to share with you is the fact that halachically, to some degree, we can look at the unfolding and development of Shabbos in four stages. And this is actually very, very interesting. The first stage of Shabbos is the non-obligatory nature of Shabbos. Shabbos was a holy day from the time of Adam HaRishon. Hashem rested, created the world in 6 days, rested on Shabbos. And Chumash Bereishis says, Hashem blessed the seventh day, Vayavarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi, Vayakadesh Oso, and he made it a holy day. Kivo Shavas Mikol Malachto, because there he rested from all of his work. So Shabbos existed as a holy day from the very creation of the world. Nevertheless, there was no halachic obligation. In other words, if we ask ourselves, how did Adam HaRishon observe Shabbos? Right? Shem ben Noach, how did they observe Shabbos? Now it's true, we have rabbinic teaching that by the time of the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they did keep the Torah even before it was given, and that would include the observance of Shabbos, but even that was a voluntary observance. Until the Torah was given, there was no obligation to keep Shabbos, which means, strangely enough, there was a long period of human and Jewish history in which the concept of Shabbos must have been known, going back from Adam HaRishon, but it did not necessarily contain any prohibitions. Now, we know very little about, other than the teaching of Chazal, that the Avos kept the Torah, Ad Shelo Nitna. We really don't know, how did Noach keep Shabbos? How did Shem keep Shabbos? Right, there's no indication that they did not do Malacha. So we have to assume, and again, we really have no proofs whatsoever for this, we have to assume that Shabbos was always marked as a special, significant day, but it did not necessarily have the confines of the Malachos. And of course, that's perfectly sensible as well, because after all, the 39 Malachos are derived from the construction of the Mishkan, which was a later event. So we'll call that stage one, Shabbos as a special holy day, but not yet circumscribed with malacha prohibitions. Now, in fact, Chazal tell us, even in Mitzrayim, when the Jews were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, except for the tribe of Levi, they worshipped idols, and the Jews did not even practice circumcision, bris milah, once again, except for Shevet Levi, Moshe Rabbeinu managed to get them a day off from work. It's interesting, the Torah does not record that he did that, because that was, you know, the only thing the Torah records is that when he first asked for the freedom, you know, Paro made it worse, but Moshe Rabbeinu actually did get them a furlough, and Moshe Rabbeinu arranged that they would get Shabbos off. Now, did the Jews consider Shabbos a holy day, or did they just consider it a day off? Once again, it's hard to know. If they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, except for Shevet Levi, it's hard to see that they looked at Shabbos as a holy day. But still, on some level, there was a Shabbos in Mitzrayim as well. By the way, the Medrash tells us that every Shabbos, the Jews in Mitzrayim would read the Tehillim Tzadik Beis, 92, which is Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. Tov lahodos l'Hashem, it is good to give thanks to Hashem. And David HaMelech later, when David HaMelech recorded it, he was recording the song and the poem that the Jewish people recited in Mitzrayim. And of course, I'm sure Rifki may have covered this at some point, but people ask the very well-known question, Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos has almost nothing to do with Shabbos at all. It doesn't even talk about Shabbos. But what's the connection? So some say, some Mefarshim learn, that one of the themes of Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos is the idea of the perplexity of looking at a world where evildoers prosper and people are victimized. Right? Befroach Rishayim Kamo Esav. The Rishayim seem to sprout up like grass. They grow and they grow and they grow. But ultimately, Shamdama Dayad, ultimately, they will be destroyed. In other words, the Jewish people, when they had their respite, they had their time to contemplate, they had their time to think, what they were thinking about is, they were trying to understand that we live in a world of such cruelty and such persecution, but we have emunah that eventually Hashem will punish the Rishayim and redeem. So it's not so much that Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos is about Shabbos, but when a person who is in a state of servitude has time to reflect on what is going on in their life, they try to understand that although the ways of Hashem are mysterious, and why do the righteous suffer, and why do evildoers prosper, but we try to understand that on some level, which we can't always see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice is going to be triumphant. Yeah.
I don't believe this, obviously, but I don't see why being an Obed Avodah Zarah and believing in the superiority of one God are mutually exclusive. They look at the Avodah Zarah as emissaries of one God.
Well, you know, it is possible. The Rambam, in fact, says that the origin of Avodah Zarah was an attempt to glorify Hashem by worshiping his subordinates. So there are different types of paganism. There is a paganism in which you believe in the supreme God and you look at everything else as emissaries, and then there's the paganism where you believe in multiple gods. Yeah, that's true, and that could be their Shabbos. But be it as it may, so all of this I will call pre-Matan Torah Shabbos, in which there was no obligation per se. By the way, that's why in the Shacharis Shemona Esrei of Shabbos, we say, Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelko. Moshe shall rejoice in his gift. So the Mefarshim say, it is referring to the gift of Shabbos that he gave the Jewish people. Okay. Stage two in Shabbos is after we left Mitzrayim. After we left Mitzrayim. But before we got to Har Sinai, we were in the oasis called Mara. Mara is an oasis. If you remember, it was called Mara because the waters of the spring were very bitter. Moshe threw in a stick and the water became sweet. And to commemorate that miracle, the place became known as Mara, the place of the bitter water. Now, there's an enigmatic pasuk in Parshas Bishalach. Shem, Sam, Lo, Chok u'mishpat. There, Hashem gave them statutes and judgments. That's all it says. According to Chazal, this does mean in the oasis of Mara, even before Matan Torah at Sinai, Hashem gave us certain commandments. Kibud Aviyim, they have a tradition that we were given already there. Para Aduma, the ritual of purity from the Tuma of a mace. And, according to Chazal, the mitzvah of Shabbos was already given in Mara. Although it is not recorded till the Aseres HaDibros, which is Matan Torah, there actually was a Shabbos in Mara. Now again, the commentaries discuss whether that had the 39 malachas, meaning to say it's important that even the obligatory Shabbos at Mara may not have been the same as the later halachas of Shabbos. Just to give you one example, the Gemara itself tells us that the Yisur of Tuchum, right, on Shabbos you're not allowed to walk
more than 2,000 amos, that's approximately 1 kilometer, beyond your city. Now again, if the houses are continuous, you can walk, right, so in Yerushalayim, you can walk from Baca to Har Nof or whatever it is, and that's fine because you have continuous houses. But if you're in the country, the amount of distance you can walk on Shabbos is actually very, very limited. 2,000 amos, like from the last house. And this is a very strict halacha, surprisingly strict. If you walk 2,001 amos, right, one amma past the limit, you can't just backtrack and step back in. You are frozen for the rest of Shabbos in a square of 4 amos by 4 amos. So don't do this. Now again, if it's a sakana, you know, if you're in a dangerous neighborhood, obviously we have leniencies. But otherwise, you're kind of frozen. So tichum, because we live in urban environments most of the time, so tichum is not something we have to think about. So it's one of those halachas that if you're out in the country or somewhere, you know, you might not even think about. But it's a very, very chomer halacha. But be it as it may, actually, it's interesting. We had a shayla of tichum. It was interesting. I was in Maalech Hamishah for Pesach. And Maalech Hamishah is around 2 miles from Telstone. So there were very, very few Americans who were keeping Yom Tov Sheni. There was no minyan for them. So on Acharon Shel Pesach, the 8th day of Pesach, which they had to keep as Yom Tov, they didn't have a minyan. But in Telstone, there was a minyan of Americans or English speakers. Well, not just English, there's people who don't live here. We're all English speakers, right? So the question is, they wanted to know, could they walk to Telstone to get a minyan for a Yom Tov davening? Because we davened at Tfilat Chol. And the issue was, lo and behold, the issue was, it was beyond the Tichum. It was only like a mile and a half, but empty. Well, 2,000 amos is 8 kilometer. That's all it is. It's like 4,000 feet. So Tichum does come up. Now, I'm just bringing this up just as a side point, just to say. Yom Tov and Shabbos. You're correct. But Yom Tov and Shabbos both have Tichum. Tichum applies to Yom Tov as well. For some reason, there were rabbis who made the same mistake you just made too. I don't know why. It's clear in the Shulchan Aruch that Tichum does apply to Yom Tov. That's. But the thing is that Chazal say in the Shabbos of Mora, which we don't have anymore, I mean, because now we're after Matan Torah, there was no Isser of Tichum. So it's interesting that Mora is not the same, but this is the first, what is significant about Mora is Shabbos became obligatory. It was no longer just a special day, but there were chiyuvim. Now, let me give you a little observation from the Levush on Nusach in the Shabbos and Yom Tov davening. When Shabbos and Yom Tov coincide, or even Chol HaMoed and Shabbos coincide, so we say the following: Vatitein lanu Hashem Elokeinu bi'ahava. Right, you have given to us in love. So let's say if it's just Yom Tov, we just say it's Yom Chag HaMatzos Hazeh, Zman Cheruseinu, Mikra Kodesh, right, a holy day, Zecher Liyetzias Mitzrayim. Now, you'll notice though, when it's Shabbos and Yom Tov, we have an extra love there. We say, Batit Lanu Hashem Elokeinu bi'ahava, you have given us in love, Es Yom HaShabbos Hazeh, Es Yom Chag HaMatzos Hazeh, Zman Cheruseinu. Then we add Bi'ahava Mikra Kodesh. So why do you add the extra word love, the second mention of the word love, when it's Shabbos? So the Levush says a fascinating thing. The first reference to love is that Hashem gave us mitzvos with love. Shabbos He gave us with love, Yom Tov He gave us with love. But the second Ava is not referring to Hashem's love for us. It's referring to our love for Hashem. So why do I only say that on Shabbos? Because here's what the Levush says. Yom Tov is obligatory because it was given to us at Har Sinai. Right? The Torah. The Torah was given at Har Sinai. But the Matan Torah of Har Sinai was under duress and compulsion. Chazal tell us, Hashem held the mountain over our heads and said, if you accept the Torah, it's good. If not, I'm going to crush you. So Yom Tov, I could say, Hashem gave it to us out of love, but we didn't accept it out of love. Because our acceptance at Matan Torah was because the mountain was held over our heads. But Shabbos, we were given even before Har Sinai, in the oasis of Mara. And in the oasis of Mara, Hashem did not hold the mountain over our heads. Therefore, the second bi'ahava refers to the fact that we accepted Shabbos out of love, even though Yom Tov we accepted out of compulsion. Right? This is what the Levush says. But this is the second stage of Shabbos. This is all pre-Aseres HaDibros. The third stage of Shabbos was the Shabbos that emerged from the giving of the Torah. Right? The fourth commandment. The fourth of the Aseres HaDibros, which comes in two versions, Yisro and V'yeschanan. In Yisro, in Shmos, remember the day of Shabbos to keep it holy. In V'yeschanan, observe the day of Shabbos. Hashem said both, Zachor v'shamor b'dibur echad. Without repeating our discussion earlier, you'll remember that Zachor is to honor Shabbos by Kiddush, and by Havdalah, and by a festive meal, to honor the Shabbos in a positive way, and Shamor is to observe the laws of Shabbos by refraining from Malacha. You'll also remember Rav Hirsch's definition of Malacha, that Malacha does not mean physical labor, but Malacha means activities that show our creative mastery, domination, and control over the physical world. And since Shabbos commemorates HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the source of creation, we refrain from exercising our creative mastery. So every malacha, this is Rav Hirsch's insight, malacha is not a function of how physically hard it is. Like people say, well, how hard is it to turn on a light? How hard is it to drive a car, right? It's like the idea of saying, I got to walk 5 miles in the hot sun because it's a malacha to drive. Well, if malacha would be physical effort, it's certainly a lot more effort to walk in the hot sun. Ella, but if the idea of malacha is control over the physical world, then the utilization of an internal combustion engine that burns fuel is a great significant accomplishment, but through burning, through fire, much more so than simply walking. So that's Zachor and Shamor. Now, I do want to point out just a few things, halakhic comments. If you continue in the fourth commandment, so it says, right, so you'll recall another difference. So difference number one between Yisro and V'yeschanan is Zachor and Shamor. Difference number two between Yisro and V'yeschanan is the reason that is given for keeping Shabbos. In Yisro, the reason is the familiar reason. Hashem made the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. So when you rest on the seventh, you are commemorating Hashem as the creator of the world. That's in Yisro. In V'yeschanan, the Torah gives a different reason. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Hashem redeemed you, and He made you free, and that is why He gave you Shabbos. In other words, in Shmos, Shabbos is connected to creation. In V'yeschanan, Shabbos is connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the exodus of Egypt. Now, people have a question, well, how does Shabbos remind us of the Exodus? And even in Kiddush, we say, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. How does observing Shabbos remind me of Mitzrayim? It reminds me of creation, I understand that. It doesn't remind me of Mitzrayim. But the answer is, it does, because every Shabbos, you are making a statement that the world and its demands do not own you. So in effect, Briyas HaOlam says, I am not the master of this world. Yetzias Mitzrayim says, the world is not a master over me. So it's kind of moving in opposite directions. I don't own the world, but the world doesn't own me either. Right? So that's kind of the double perspective. Shabbos is both about freedom and about submission. Briyas HaOlam emphasizes the fact that I must submit to God, but the Yetzias Mitzrayim reminds me that I have a certain freedom vis-a-vis the world. And that's an important idea. So that's difference number two. Now, then in both versions, in both Yisro and V'Yeshanan, the Torah says, Lo sasa kol malacha, do not do malacha. So malacha, again, as Rav Hirsch says, is creative mastery over the raw materials of nature. And then it says, ata, you, which includes men and women, uvincha uvitecha, you, your son and your daughter. Now let's stop there and analyze this halachically. So the Torah says, not only can you not do work on Shabbos, but your son and your daughter cannot do work either. So Rashi raises the obvious question. Are we talking about a son and a daughter that is already bar or bat mitzvah? Or are we talking about a minor? So Rashi says we can't be talking about a child who's already bar mitzvah because he would be included in the atah. When Hashem says atah, the mitzvah is given to everyone that's an adult. So the Torah must be talking about children below bar mitzvah. Now, here's the important point. It's not prohibiting them because a katan or a katana is not obligated in mitzvahs. But it is prohibiting a parent to instruct their child to violate Shabbos. Now, this is a very important halacha, because sometimes you see that people use their children as a Shabbos guy of sorts. Now, once again, it's important to see the difference here. If my child is simply fooling around and violating Shabbos, there is, of course, a mitzvah on me to train him. But that's not a Torah commandment, actually. That's a rabbinic commandment, and that's only when he's a certain age. So if a three-year-old is running around turning on lights, I don't have to stop him. But I am not allowed to tell the three-year-old, hey, look at that nice light switch over there, you know, whatever it is. In other words, the Torah is actually telling me, you cannot use your children to do forbidden acts. Now, this is sometimes an issue with erevs. I mean, this is actually very disturbing in some way. Now, of course, mi'ikar adin, if there's a kosher erev, you're allowed to carry, but there are people who don't use erevin. But not only will they tell their kids to carry, which maybe is bad enough, they will tell their wives to carry, which is really a bit inexplicable to me at that point. But okay. But the truth is you shouldn't even have your child do it. A child should not be used to do malacha for you. Okay? So that's the reference to you, your son, and your daughter. Okay? Now then it mentions avdecha va'amascha, your slave, your male slave, and your female slave. So again, let's analyze this. We know in the Torah there are two types of servants or slaves that can exist. There is a Jewish slave. Now, a Jewish slave is someone, now again, people make a mistake sometimes. Sometimes people think if you owe money and you didn't pay it up, you could be sold into slavery. That's absolutely not the case. There is no debtor slavery. But there is a din if somebody stole and is unable to make restitution, they could be sold for a limited term of slavery for up to 6 years, after which time they go free. And the truth is, it's not really slavery in any sense. It's really almost like employment, an indentured servant. In fact, the Gemara actually says, if you acquire a Jewish slave, you've actually acquired a master. You have to give him the better accommodations. You have to, you know, etc. You have to support his family, if he has a family and the like. And you have to give him a job which is appropriate to his professional training. So if you happen to buy a dishonest lawyer, so to speak, you have to give him legal services. You can't have him clean up the apartments or whatever it is, right? So it's not really slavery in any sense, but a Jewish slave is a Jew. So once again, the Torah can't be telling me you have to have your Jewish slave keep Shabbos because he's also Atar. He has all the commandments. So we're talking about a non-Jewish slave. So the Torah, now this is an interesting thing. What does that mean halachically? So the Torah is telling me that if you own a non-Jew as a slave, you are not allowed to tell them to do malacha on Shabbos, even though as non-Jews, they are allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. So according to some commentaries, this is the source. Now, Baruch Hashem, we don't have slaves today, but we do know there's a whole area in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to tell non-Jews, right? There are many exceptions, and it's a very complicated area, but as a general rule, right, the general rule is that anything I'm not allowed to do myself, I am not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do for me. Now, there are many, many exceptions, etc., but the general rule is you're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do malacha. There might be ways of indirect hinting and all sorts of things like that, right? So what is the source of that? So some want to say the source of the prohibition of telling a non-Jew to do work for me on Shabbos is the fact that the Torah says you cannot tell your non-Jewish slave to do work. Other commentaries say no. That only applies to a slave that is kind of your property. If it's a separate non-Jew, the prohibition is rabbinic. And in fact, it's not a Torah law at all. It's a rabbinic law, but some do want to root it in that. Now, then it goes on and says, so we talk about son and daughter. We talked about slave. And then it even mentions your animals, your oxen, and your donkeys. What does that mean? If my cow is munching grass on Shabbos, I gotta stop it because it's harvesting, right? So obviously not, but there actually is a halacha that you're not allowed to have your animals do work even if they're rented out. For example, if I own a cow and I rent it out to a guy before Shabbos and the guy is gonna use the cow for farming, it is prohibited for me to let my animals do work on Shabbos. Now, what the animal is doing for itself is not called work. If an animal eats, an animal digs, right? You don't have to stop your dog from digging holes in the yard. What the animal does for itself is not malacha. But if there's any human being, even a goy, right? Now, once I sell my animal, I'm not responsible for it anymore. But if it's still my animal, but I'm renting it out, I got to specify that it not be done on Shabbos. Now, if you remember, the Gemara gives us the story of the great Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer, whose donkey was sold to a guy, but the donkey refused to do work on Shabbos. the donkey says he's a Shomer Shabbos. The Gemara says this humorously. The Gemara says, when it talks about how the generations have gotten progressively lower and lower in spirituality, so the Gemara says, if the earlier generations are like angels, we are like people. And if you look at the earlier generations are like people, we are like donkeys, and not like the donkey of Pinchas ben Yoyer, but even worse than that. So we see that Shabbos involves a whole bunch of things. We cannot do the 39 malachos. We're not allowed to have our children do things on our behalf, although if they do it on their own, that's a separate thing. We are not allowed to have our non-Jewish servants do things on our behalf. And some even connect that to the law that today we cannot tell a goy to do it for us. And finally, even our animals cannot do malacha on Shabbos. Again, it's not a commandment to the animal, obviously, but it's basically saying that we cannot impose on our animals any type of labor, even if the one doing the labor is a non-Jew that rented the animal. Or whatever, once the animal is sold, of course, to a non-Jew, it is not subject to those prohibitions. So Shabbos is a very, very all-encompassing idea in that way. Okay, so that's some of the halakhas that we learn out from that. Now, we know, of course, that the definition of malacha are the 39 activities that were involved in the construction of the Mishkan. Now, the number 39 is a very significant number. First of all, it's the same gematria as tal. Tal is dew, and dew is the medium by which Hashem is going to resurrect the dead. Liyasid lava, there'll be a spiritual dew that will bring life and vitality to the dead. And Chazal see in this that a shmira, observing the 39 malachos, will bring the tal.
I don't understand what the connection is between the 39 malachos of service in the Mishkan and Shabbat.
Yeah, well, again, Mishkan represents holiness of space. HaKadosh Baruch Hu demarcates a space, and through 39 processes, a space becomes holy. Shabbos represents the sanctification of time, and time is a higher dimension than space, and therefore the sanctification by the affirmative activity of 39 gets superseded by the holiness of time. But you'll see in a second the idea of the 39. Now, so 139 is connected to Tal. But more significantly, this is what the Mekubalim say. We're going to read in Pirkei Avos in a few weeks that Hashem created the world, the universe really, with 10 utterances. Biasara ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. And what does that mean? That means there are actually 9 times in Parshas Bereishis where it says Vayomer Hashem, Hashem said, and although there's only 9 times, but Bereishis bara Elokim is considered to be the first one. So God created the world with 10 utterances. But the Mekubalim tell us, when I say world, I mean universe, the Mekubalim tell us that there are actually 4 worlds, not one world, or not one universe. And again, this is a little heavy duty, and we can't delve into it totally, but just to give you the vocabulary, and you may have heard of all of this, the 4 worlds move from the most spiritual and ethereal to the concrete. Right? It's very similar to a Platonic idea that the physical world is a manifestation of a higher spiritual ideal. And the concept is that how do you get from the ethereal spiritual God to the concrete physicality of the world? And it goes through a series of stages. And the first world is the world of Atzilut. Atzilut, which is Aleph Tzadik Yud, Lamed Vav Saf, the world of Atzilut, which is normally translated the world of emanation, pure Ruchniyut. Then we have the world of Beriah, creation. And then we have the world of Yetzirah, formation. And then we have the world of Asiya, which is physical action. So it's abbreviated Avya, Aleph, Beis, Yud, Ayin. And normally, all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's spiritual energy comes to us through the world of Asiya, so it's diluted because we're not able. We're physically not able to receive the light, so the light gets refracted and constricted and modified, so to speak, till it comes into a form that we could take it, because the pure light would shatter us. Once in a while, there are great, great tzaddikim who can bypass the lower 3 worlds and they get an enlightenment directly from the world of Atzilus. It's like using, you know, nuclear energy, so to speak. In fact, they tell a story about Rav Chaim Sanzer, the Sanzer Rav, that once he was speaking Suda Shlishis and he was in a very, very deep place and he started coughing. So his son brought him a cup of tea. So Rav Chaim, his concentration was interrupted, so he kind of rebuked his son. He says, when you're in the world of Atzilus, you don't drink tea. But the son said, when you're in the world of Atzilus, you don't cough either. So apparently, you're still in physical Asiya, so you need the tea in the world of Asiya. Okay. So here is the idea. If we posit Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, and every world has Asara Ma'amaros, so it turns out that the number 40 represents the totality of creation. Because 10 ma'amaros, 10 statements per each world, 4 worlds, that gives you 40. That is why you find that the number 40 is always connected to creation. For example, a newly conceived embryo is not considered a life for abortion, for other purposes, till it is 40 days old, which is very small, but 40. That is why Matan Torah, which was the creation of Am Yisrael, was 40 days. That's why the Mabul, which was the creation of a new world, was 40 days. That's why the Golos of Mitzrayim, ideally, should have been 400 years, which is at least a multiple of 40. And that is why a mikveh, which is the body of water in which a person emerges newly created, we don't want to keep a person in the mikveh 40 days, that would be a little hard, but we change the duration into a quantity, and the quantity of water is 40 sa'a. A sa'a is like a liquid measurement, like a gallon. I mean, 40 sa'a actually is around 250 gallons of water, is the minimum size of a mikveh, but it's expressed in halacha as 40 sa'a. 40 is the idea of creation because of the 4 worlds and the asara ma'amaros. Now, here is the thing. A human being is in the image of Hashem. Hashem gave us many, many powers of creation. And we refrain from exercising those powers on Shabbos. But of the 40 levels of creation that God has, we only have power over 39. Because the 40th is the ability to create yesh me'ayin, something out of nothing. And that is only Hashem. Right? So the idea of 39 is the idea that human beings are capable of 39 out of the 40 levels, but not yesh me'ayin. What is the story? They tell a joke about a great physicist or a great biologist who finally cracked the secrets of creating life from inorganic matter. You know, he took dirt, he took something that was dead, and he was able to create life. And he calls out to God, and he says, God, you know, until now, the big thing that you did that nobody else could do was to create life from non-life, right? And now I've done it. So he says, God, you know, there's no difference in you and me. So God said, next time get your own dirt. You know, so the point basically is that we can create all sorts of things from other things, but only HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Bria of Yesh Me'ayin. And that is the 40th level, or maybe that's the first level. We only have the other 39 coming from that. So that's kind of the symbolic idea of the 39 Melachos of Shabbos. Yeah.
How do you connect this to the 39 lashes?
Yes, well, it's also connected to that, because when a person sins, a person has lost his right to live, and the person needs to be recreated. But since it's a recreation that we're doing, the Beis Din is doing by punishment, so we do 39, and then Hashem will supply the 40th level that the person needs. Okay? So this is kind of a little bit of an understanding about the Melachos. But let me point out a very interesting vort of the Meshech Chochmah. The Meshech Chochmah, I'm not sure we'll be able to, okay, hopefully we'll get this. And the Meshech Chochmah says the following idea. He says, if you look, you know, we just read in Sefer Shemos a number of parshios about the construction of the Mishkan, and you may have noticed that Shabbos and Mishkan are juxtaposed in two different places in the book of Shemos. The first time, we have Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, that gives you all the commandments about the Mishkan. And then at the beginning of Kisisa, it says, afterwards, V'shamru b'nei Yisrael es ha-Shabbos. They should keep the Shabbos. Which means, in the first time, it's all the laws of Mishkan, and then Shabbos is put afterwards. When Moshe communicates this to Bnei Yisrael in Parshas Vayakel, you will recall that the sequence is exactly the opposite. He first tells them, 6 days you shall do work, and on the seventh day you shall rest. And then he tells them, you have to build a Mishkan. So when Hashem communicated to Moshe, Hashem mentioned Mishkan first and then Shabbos. When Moshe communicates to Bnei Yisrael, he mentions Shabbos first and then Mishkan. By the way, that juxtaposition, by the way, is the halachic source that the definition of the 39 malachos are what is done in the Mishkan, because the two parshiyos are together. But why does Moshe deviate from the order in which Hashem spoke to him? So this is what the Meshech Chachma says. The reason Moshe changed the order, and Moshe didn't do it on his own, Hashem told him to change the order, is because in between the two events was the Chet HaEgel. And the Chet HaEgel changed an important halacha. And this is what the Meshech Chachma says. The Meshech Chachma says an amazing chiddush lahalacha. Well, it's a theoretical halacha. The Meshech Chachma says, had there not been a Chet HaEgel, we still would have had Shabbos, of course, but Mishkan would have overridden Shabbos. So the reason when Hashem said Mishkan and then Shabbos, Hashem is indicating Mishkan overrides the Shabbos. It is only after Chet HaEgel that Shabbos overrides Mishkan. And therefore, the Meshech Chachma says, the rule that you don't build your Mishkan or your temple on Shabbos is a consequence of the Chet HaEgel. I'll try to explain why. Before the Chet HaEgel, or had there not been a Chet HaEgel, there still would have been Shabbos, but we would be allowed to build a Mishkan. Now, here's the basis of his assumption. Number one, he explains that this is the definition of why the sequence is different. If you think about it, in many, many ways, the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan was a Shabbos-free zone. I mean, think about the activities they did in the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan. Mishkan and Mikdash had the same halachas there, on Shabbos. They brought the daily offerings, which means they shechted, and they cooked, and they burned. They brought the Musaf offerings. Right? So you walk into the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to see them slaughtering animals and sprinkling blood and cooking and starting fires. Yes, they did. Yeah, but that's actually, but the truth is, that's actually less of a problem because playing an instrument is only a rabbinic prohibition anyway. But even malachos that are Torah malachos. Right? So if you walked into the Beis HaMikdash, all sorts of korbanos are being brought on Shabbos. So let's ask this question. If you're allowed to bring korbanos on Shabbos, because it's part of the temple service, why wouldn't you be allowed to build the Mishkan on Shabbos? That's also part of the temple service. In other words, what halachically would be the basis for the distinction? Well, the answer is simple. That korbanos are intrinsically a mitzvah. Building the temple is a means. An example would be a bris. Think about a bris. If a child's eighth day is on Shabbos, we do a bris on Shabbos, even though a bris is technically Chilul Shabbos, because the mitzvah of bris overrides Shabbos. Now, is the mohel allowed to drive on Shabbos to do a bris? Can the parents drive, take the... No, difference. One is the mitzvah itself. The other is what we call a preliminary, and the term for that is Hechsher mitzvah. Hechsher mitzvah means that even when a mitzvah is so important that it overrides Shabbos, the preliminary preparation for the mitzvah cannot override Shabbos. Right? There's a difference between the mitzvah and the preliminary preparation for the mitzvah. So we do the bris, but we don't drive. We bring the sacrifices, but we don't build the tabernacle to be able to bring the sacrifices. Right? That would be the logic of this halachic distinction. So says the Meshech Chachma, before the sin of the golden calf, building the Mishkan was not just a preliminary. Because really, before the golden calf, Hashem was accessible everywhere. You could bring a korban everywhere. We were so close to Hashem, I could bring a korban here, there. I didn't need a Mishkan to bring a korban. But rather, the Mishkan was in itself a korban. We honored Hashem by building a Mishkan. So in the pre-Cheta Egel world, the Mishkan was in itself an offering of homage to Hashem. And therefore, the same way the sacrifices override Shabbos, the building of the Mishkan would override Shabbos as well. But after the sin of the golden calf, there's a certain distance between us and the Almighty. We are no longer able to approach Him whenever we want. We have to have a place. We have to have Kohanim. At that point, the Mishkan was now a preliminary condition to bring a korban, and as a preliminary condition, it cannot override Shabbos. So the Meshech Chachma has a fascinating hypothetical halakha. Now, the reason I call it hypothetical is we never had a Mishkan without a golden calf. So, you know, this never happened. But the Meshech Chachma is creating, like science fiction writers, you create these alternative realities. He's creating an alternative reality scenario that had there not been a chet ha'egel, we would have been permitted to build the Mishkan even on Shabbos. Yeah.
I heard that, just like you said, that the first and the second and the third different stages.
Yes.
That before the giving of the Torah, there were no instructions, there were no restrictions on the Mishkan. I'm trying to figure out how to say it. The Mishkan was going to be built in ourselves. Without the actual physical...
Yeah, yes. So, 100% correct. In fact, I was actually going to say the next point. And that is, the assumption that the Meshech Chachma is making, that had there been no golden calf, there would have been a Mishkan that you could have built on Shabbos. Rashi absolutely rejects that assumption. Because it is Rashi's position that had there been no Chet HaEgel, there wouldn't have been a Mishkan at all because Hashem would have been accessible everywhere. That's 100% correct. Which is why, indeed, Rashi does not follow the... Meshech Chachma was way after Rashi, but Rashi would not accept the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma is following, however, the view of other commentaries, such as Ramban, who does assume there would have been a Mishkan, and the Meshech Chachma says that would have overridden even Shabbos. So again, Bekitzer, what I'm trying to do today was, I mentioned there are four stages of Shabbos. First stage is pre-Mara, when Shabbos was a holy day but did not necessarily have any restrictions. Then we have Mara. Then we have Matan Torah pre-Cheta Ega, which is the same Shabbos that we have, except for the Meshech Chachma's assumption that you would have been permitted to build the tabernacle itself. And then finally, we have the final crystallized Shabbos, which is after the Cheta Ega, which gives us all the 39 Malachos and the like. Now, I will point out, of course, that Shabbos continues to grow by many, many rabbinic enactments throughout the years. One outstanding example is the laws of Muktzah, right? The whole category of things you don't move on Shabbos are even within your house. These are rabbinic laws to enhance the holiness of Shabbos. They are rabbinic legislation, and Chazal continued to add to that. Although Muktzah is a strange thing, although Muktzah is classified as rabbinic law, it is in the Tanakh, not in the Torah, it's in the Tanakh. You already find it in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah at the beginning of the Second Temple. So it's very, very early rabbinic legislation. Right. So these are the four layers of Shabbos. Okay, for next time, though, I want to go over still some more things about Shabbos. I want to go over some of the tefillos of Shabbos because Shabbos has a very unusual nusach of prayer, which is unique. Every other chag, Shachris Mincha Maariv is the identical Amida. It is only Shabbos where Maariv, Shachris, Mincha has a different middle bracha. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit. Okay, have a good week, everybody.